Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome to the Deep Dive. We are here today, Andy and myself, to break down the NFL draft, to look at these first beautiful division prop prices. Finally popping all over the interwebs, all over the offshore books. We're seeing team total, win totals finally popping all over the gambling space. So it's still far, but the NFL season, you can feel it. You can feel it coming. And it's kind of a good kind of, we've spent a lot of time thinking about the draft. We bet a lot on the draft. We didn't win a ton of money on the draft.
Yikes.
But
yeah.
Nevertheless, having spent all that time thinking about these teams, what they need, who improved, who really shat the bed last weekend, you know, we can kind of use that as some good perspective here to get some initial thoughts on the way these divisions are shaping up, the way that the prop market looks right now. So with that, how are you doing, Andy?
I am solid. I'm actually, it's funny, I'm over on a different book. Where am I? Bovada. Looking for, they don't have any of the things you just said yet, but they have, it's funny, like, these are normal things. These are kind of your bread and butter futures. Division winners, win totals, maybe to win the conference, to win the Super Bowl. Bovada has over-under on Bradley Chubb sacks for the year.
What? But
they don't have any of the other things I just listed. Those are not up. Josh Rosen touchdowns.
What?
Or no, Josh Rosen total starts. So they can't be bothered to put up the freaking division prices that other books already have. But we got DJ Moore versus Calvin Ridley receiving yards.
That really just doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
Unless I'm missing something, it's like, you know what, let's just put some wild matchup bets instead. Baker Mayfield, well, over 9.5 starts.
I am a little concerned about getting a start in 2018. Kaiser's gone. Tyrod Taylor.
Kaiser, I meant the other one.
Yeah, Tyrod Taylor.
Who did they trade him for? No, he got shipped up to Green Bay.
Yeah, Kaiser's in Green Bay now. He's backing up A-Rodge.
Tyrod
Taylor is I watched a lot of tape. I watched a lot of games, a lot of Bills games. Tyrod Taylor is not necessarily the kind of, he's not the Mike Glennon that's going to get, you know, beat out relatively early on in the campaign, in my opinion.
This is not the direction that we had the show going, but you just need Tyrod to hold the reins there for 7 games, and this could cash.
Yeah, and if you look at the Browns' schedule, they have some winnable ones early, so they could be they could be 1-5, and that's infinity more wins than they got last year. You know, Hugh Jackson could double his all-time wins with the Browns total, and then I don't know how you bench Tyrod Taylor. No, but like in seriousness, the Browns, you want to talk about winners and losers in the draft. A lot of people have kind of crowned the Browns the winner. Okay.
Two top 5 picks.
Sure.
I'm trying to fuck that up.
Yeah, two top 5 picks. They had pick 1 and pick 3 in round 2 to go on top of that. They have, you know, certainly addressed some of the positions of biggest need. You know, Baker Mayfield, I guess, what's if you just had to kind of grade, okay, the Browns, second year in a row, they're picking first overall. They have yet to draft in the first round the future of their franchise quarterback. They've had, you know, since they drafted Tim Couch when their franchise came back into existence in 1999 or whatever, they've drafted something like, you know, 15 quarterbacks, and not one of them has been able to really maintain the starting job here in Cleveland. What is your opinion of Baker Mayfield in general, his fit in Cleveland, and what to expect out of this kid?
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, how many times have I dogged on this guy?
You're an anti-Big 12 quarterbacker.
I am anti-Big 12 quarterback. Maybe, you know, maybe this will be the guy that finally does. It's the exception to the rule. Yeah, I'm not huge on it just because of the defense that he played. But then I've brought this up too. I was pretty excited about, you know, the performance he put up against a tough Georgia team.
Did you ever bet on him to win the Heisman last year?
No, God, no.
No, I didn't.
I don't think I actually had much on anybody. I think I had some long shots. Boy, that bounced around. The Heisman's such a goofy thing. It's like, oh, it's going to be sack one all year, and then, boom, it's a quarterback like always.
Did you – I know you bet some college football. Did you have Oklahoma beating Ohio State in the earlier in the season when he did the plant the flag in the field?
Ooh, I don't know if I had that one. I did have Georgia. I had Georgia to beat them in the
Rose Bowl.
Yeah, in the Rose Bowl, and that was looking like shit to start out. That was a point that might have been the best game, and until we got the walk off there, that kind of trumped it at the end.
That's true. Yeah, but I agree.
Yeah, that was a solid game.
Yeah, it was really entertaining. That was really entertaining. I think they might have been two.
It was close. It was close to it. I think it was a plus two.
Yeah, I think I had Oklahoma in that one, and I was pretty sad because that looked good for a lot of that game. Okay, so I don't know. I don't really – I'm annoyed by the pick, personally. I'm annoyed by the Browns doing what they did disinformation-wise. And a lot of that is born out of the fact that I had bets on Sam Darnold to be the first overall pick, not necessarily because I watched lots of – Sam Darnold take, and I have, you know, some serious opinion that he was the best prospect in this draft. I really, you know, I don't really know that any of the quarterback prospects were as good as they were made out to be. You know, of the guys that I got to see, you know, the position players and some of the defensive players, I think were you know, much more, are going to be much more impactful in the next 2-3 years than any of the quarterbacks. I certainly didn't see the likes of a Deshaun Watson. You know, even we'll see about some of the other guys that went in the 2017 draft for quarterback, but overall that felt like a stronger class to me than this class. You know, we'll give the Browns the benefit of the doubt that they saw something that and apparently the reports are a handful of other teams saw as well, that Baker Mayfield has an X factor that you know, transcends the quarterback position and makes him, you know, an impactful player. You know, my overall thoughts on drafting and how important the draft is and what makes for a good draft and a bad draft, what makes for a well-drafted player and a poorly drafted player, a lot of that is born out of the personnel, you know, the team knowing what, you know, what their strengths are in terms of player development, what their, you know, where they have specific needs, where, you know, young players are going to be able to fill important roles, develop confidence, you know, learn important things about playing their position and be impactful for five plus years. And so it's kind of silly to kind of, you know, look at a draft and, you know, pretend like, oh yeah, well, you know, I thought this player looked great on tape in college, therefore he was drafted at a value pick, and that makes for this team having a good draft. You know, to me, a team like Denver, who got a player like Chubb, who has a defense that, you know, felt like they needed a, you know, a shot in the arm to make up for the fact that they had been carrying the load forever. Yeah, well,
they just took a break.
You could say that, but I could spin it a different way for you and say that defense just—they were beat down, man. They spent so much time on the field. They carried the load.
Some awful
they
quarterbacks. Carried
the, right. They were some awful quarterbacks. They were put in some brutal positions. You know, they may have taken a year off voluntarily, but it might not have been voluntary. It might have just been like, man, we are beat. We need to regroup. And here they get the premier pass rusher in the draft, the guy who's going to have an immediate impact and in important downs on the field. in a division where you're not necessarily going up against the world-beating offensive lines. I think that was a great pick, great fit. And sure, they didn't address the quarterback position, to the tune of some of their fans were hoping. And yes, John Elway said some of the dumbest things I've heard of about Paxton Lynch this weekend. But still, that to me grades out as a great pick, because you have players, you have a system in place where you can, make the most out of that player and develop him even further. And oh, by the way, you've got now a second threat to, so that teams can't, put three hats on Von Miller and take him out of the game. So I support that sort of pick. And then you go like completely the other direction with the likes of what the Giants did. You have some thoughts on the Giants draft?
We went back and forth on this, didn't we? A solid month about, because there was talking about, there was talk of taking him first.
Absolutely.
Way back before we even got to which quarterback is going first. There was a lot of talk about taking Saquon number one overall, and I was sick to my stomach thinking about that. It was one of those you can't have a running back that high, but he's so good. What do you do? And my solution was just trade out of the pick. If you're not going to take a quarterback, get everything you possibly could get out of it.
Absolutely.
And they didn't end up doing, they ended up taking a quarterback. I think the Browns were right to take a quarterback. We'll see if it's the right one. And then the Giants just went and did what the Browns shouldn't have. I don't love a lot of people are, and he's the favorite to win Rookie of the Year. He might rush for 1,500 yards when Rookie of the Year, and that'll be a lot of fun when they're finishing third in the division. They probably needed to trade back or possibly reload a quarterback.
You would back this roster over the Redskins right now? The Giants roster?
It's close. I'm not a big Alex Smith guy.
Oh, okay. Well, let me circle back on a couple things.
Back to the Browns too.
Back to the Browns.
I loved where we talked a little off air, like the, I like Todd Haley. I like Zampezi as a quarterback's coach. Haley was there to develop Romo way back in the day.
That's right.
Like these are a couple guys. I think Zampezi, I'm going to have to double check on that, where he was. He had a guy too. He had a couple guys. But I thought the quarterback would be, despite Hugh Jackson, would be going into a good situation. That's where I hoped it would have been Darnold or Rosen, just because I was higher on those. But hopefully, I'm kind of a closet Browns fan now. Like, okay. I just feel so bad for him. I want that to succeed. I think quarterback defense was the right pick at 1-4. It's hard to say that they had a great draft because they had, like you said, four picks in the first 35.
It's hard to
screw that up. But
even still, they took a running back early in the second round when they could have waited and found, they could have gotten some value later on a guy that was just as talented. They took an offensive lineman first overall in the second round that I think was a reach. I think there were better offensive linemen on the board, and great. You developed your board, you had confidence in it, and you made your picks. Good luck. Hugh Jackson is still not a serviceable coach, in my opinion. At some point, they will have to replace him. I don't know for the life of me why they didn't do it prior to this year and this offseason, because there were good candidates out there, I felt like, and there were good, there was a good opportunity to cut ties. Guy just went 0-16, for Christ's sakes. It's only ever been done twice. The only other guy that did it got fired immediately after, and what is he, the D-line coach in Dallas now or something? There's really, it's really tough to defend, keeping him around and putting the future of the franchise now in his hands to develop. And, if who's to say that they keep him, that that if they have another disappointing season, if they go 3-13, what are you going to keep them around again? Oh, what are you going to now fire your head coach, your offensive coordinator? You bring in a new head coach and tell him he has to keep the same offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach so you can have some continuity for your young quarterback you developed? Like, I just see lots of, this is fraught with issues. All that said, I'm with you in terms of I'm hopeful for the Browns. I even think that they have a legitimate, NFL roster now. They didn't last year. They didn't the year before. This year, they actually have players now. It's tough to completely write them off this season. But boy, do I wish they had changed head coaches, and I would be a lot more bullish on this team. So, with that said, the gamesmanship, I just want to touch on this a little bit, of what the Browns did in terms of keeping their pick hidden. I am annoyed because I lost my bet on Darnold to be the first quarterback taken. I also don't understand for the life of me what the point was. What was the point of keeping that secret? And then you tell your head coach 2 days beforehand, he immediately leaks it. Now you all look like dumbasses. Like, you didn't gain any tactical advantage. You've proven out your coach to be, a liability in terms of keeping secrets. Like, what was going on all that time? Like, at least give your fans some time to get excited, to get hyped up about this kid. Get out in front of it and really, like, give yourself some positive spin so you can start to build up this guy's confidence or something. And maybe he doesn't need his confidence built up anymore or something like that. But, like, I just didn't understand what the point was, because apparently they didn't really listen to trade offers for the fourth pick. And we'll get to trade offers in a second. But, if they were trying to prevent the Giants from making a deal with the second pick, I guess they succeeded, but then in the end they took a guy at four that no one else was going to take it for. So it was all confusing.
Smoke screening yourself. It just felt like you have the first pick. If you're not going to trade, if you're just going to pick someone, you can just come out and say who you're going to pick.
Yeah.
You're going to pick. And maybe they thought, I don't know what the fuck they thought. If they, the thing is, if they took someone else's guy, maybe it would give that team more time to maneuver out of that spot. Like, maybe the Jets would move back and then somebody would steal somebody. But if they were going to take that at four, well, I don't know. The Browns are done.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, the way it all played out the day of, and my focus and intensity on trying to understand what was happening in the situation and try to make some sense out of something that was nonsense. I really feel like I wasted a lot of time last Thursday, just reading the reports and trying to guess if people were lying and smoke screening and all that stuff. And lo and behold, they weren't. The one positive thing I'll say about the first overall pick and the Baker Mayfield thing was he won the day on social media on Wednesday and then again on Thursday. With the Brett Favre photo recreation. Boy, was that awesome.
And everything.
That was so great. I couldn't get enough of that. That was so great. And the timing was great too, because you started hearing reports like, oh, he might go number one overall. And then he just drops a bomb, this freaking awesome, moment of nostalgia. That was well done by him and his camp. And that was a nice move. So I don't know how that translates to being a good football player. I don't know how that translates to beating the Steelers or the Ravens in the next 10 years. But best of luck to you, Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Now, a word on the Giants. These Giants were the biggest losers for me in the draft, and it wasn't close. And it was all born out of the second pick for Saquon Barkley. They fell in love with this kid, apparently. They did not listen to trade offers from any team that was willing to trade up into the number two spot to draft a quarterback of their choosing, even when Sam Darnold slid out of the number one pick and was available there and the number two. For any team who wanted what a lot of teams had graded as the best player in the draft, the best quarterback in the draft, was sitting there too. The Giants did not listen to trade offers. They had their hearts set on Saquon Barkley. And then the quotes Gettleman gave after the fact made it sound like he had had some kind of a stroke. They were absolutely ridiculous. They made no sense to me. And this franchise is being run extremely poorly right now, and they somehow, some way, think that they have like a shot at one more Super Bowl with Eli Manning in the next couple years before his career's over, I got bad news for you. Did you not watch the tape of Giants versus Redskins on Thanksgiving? Maybe they were all too drunk from Thanksgiving parties and all and tryptophaned out on turkey and they didn't actually see that game. I saw that game. Eli Manning's career is over. I'm sorry. He is not going to have this late resurgence like a la Tom Brady. He is not an elite quarterback in this league right now. I think if you made me put every quarterback on, you know, ranking on every quarterback who will be starting week one, Eli Manning is going to be somewhere in the 25 to 28 range, I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's fair. I put him at 26. Yeah, I got, pulled up my rankings.
Right, and, you know, people will say, well, he's got, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. to throw to. He's going to be back and healthy. He'll be better. Look, if that is the case, anyone can do that. Get a young kid in there, develop him. He can make mistakes. He's going to make amazing throws to Odell Beckham Jr. as well. Like this, it's unbelievable to me that a team like the Giants, with the chance of a lifetime to draft the successor to your franchise quarterback, is, you know, it's sitting there. It's all right there, and somehow, some way, they decide, no, we're going to take a position where statistics have shown through the years, and this is not a knock on Saquon Barkley. But statistics have shown through the years that you are as likely to get production out of a seventh-round pick running back as a first-round pick running back. The difference in talent.
Who won Rookie of the Year last year?
Alvin Kamara. He was in the third round.
He was a first-round pick, wasn't he? I'm sure.
Kamara? No.
Yeah, I don't. I know.
You're being sarcastic. So, you know, guys. And you go back through the years, and like the teams that are succeeding in this league are teams that are finding running back talent in the free agent market in the fifth, sixth, seventh round of the drafts, or teams like the Patriots who just will get a bunch of running backs, you know. And I know I'm saying this, and for the love of freaking God, the Patriots took a running back in the first round. I don't know what the hell they were thinking.
I'm pretty bad out of shape. End of first day, start of the second day. Running back to flight. Yeah.
I don't know what I don't know what league we're living in where personnel people haven't caught up to the fact that the running back position in this league is probably the least important of any non-special teams player on your roster. And so I just don't get it, man. I really don't. And the Giants use their second overall pick. Yeah, and oh, by the way, the Giants, you know, if you looked at their performance last year and you evaluated every position on their roster and where they needed upgrades, did the running back position need upgrade? Yes. Was it the most important position that needed upgrade? Not even freaking close. Their offensive line is a disaster. They went and signed over the hill Nate Solder as their fix in the for the offensive tackle position. Go back and find the last time a free agent got signed away from the Patriots and it turned out to be a good move. I could not be more bearish on the Giants. This is a team that has absolutely no idea what they're doing in terms of constructing a roster. And Drew Bledsoe.
He led right into Romo.
Chris Long and LeGarrette Blount were good free agent signings away from the Patriots last season because they both had impact, you know, on the Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl run, but they were ancillary parts. You do not entrust the blindside, you know, blocking responsibilities to a guy the Patriots are willing to let walk away and replace with a project. Why did they use their traded up? They traded away Brandon Cooks to get this pick and promptly chose, and granted, this has all come back to bite me when this guy becomes like a Hall of Fame, you know, offensive lineman, I suppose. But they drafted a guard who they're going to move to tackle or something ridiculous like that. They have a whole line, you know, a whole offensive workroom, the offensive line room at training camp will be projects, and they're going to have to figure it out. And you look at their schedule. Do you have their schedule handy? I'll jump to the point I'm going to make here. They have to play Houston. They have to play Jacksonville in the first four games. They're going to have tough pass rushes right out of the fucking gate. And man, if Tom Brady is standing and healthy come week five, when the extended preseason for the Patriots is over, I'm going to feel like they dodged a bullet because they are going to have some serious pass protection issues this season, and they could manifest early and it could get ugly. So I was disappointed with the Patriots draft.
Let's talk about a team who seemed to not do anything wrong last year. No matter what they touch, it went right. The backup quarterback wins the Super Bowl. All their free agents were perfect. The D-line sure. was ferocious. So you talk about a running back not being a need, not being drafted too high. In my mind, and I'm sure I read this too, I'm sure other people, running back was a mild need for the Philadelphia Eagles. And they get down into the deep round, still haven't done anything about that. Bo Scarborough, still on the board. Eagles draft a rugby player. They know they're playing chess. We're playing chess. Bo Scarborough, huge name. Obviously, he wasn't highly touted in the draft. His predecessors, Alabama running backs, some of them haven't been all that impressive, but
sure.
I love that. They kind of needed a running back. I thought they might do it. Fuck it. Rugby player. Giant. By the way, maybe we should post some of that. Have you watched any of him playing?
No, is he good?
Like, honestly, I could have been watching a clip of any. I wouldn't have known if it was the right guy or not. I saw some clips somebody posted. He's just arm shivering people over. He's a terrifying man.
Oh man!
And he's going to be like a tackle, I suppose. I think he's a lineman, so he wouldn't have to hold the ball.
I'm going to go and I'm going to make a prediction that the Eagles were feeling themselves a little too much. The Eagles front office was feeling themselves a little too much. You know what other front office was feeling themselves?
Fuck it. Let's not even take a football player, guys.
Yeah, seriously.
They flipped a coin. They're like, we're either going to draft a hockey player or a rugby player.
You know what other team was feeling themselves a little too much? The Saints, man. They swung and hit a double or a home run on every pick last year. And boy, did they walk into this draft thinking, "Oh, well, we've got this figured out." They traded up for a marginal. I don't know, maybe not. Maybe he was the top defensive player on the board for all I can tell you. I have no freaking clue. All I know is that the guy, he was a prototype. Like, this is going to be a project to develop this guy into an impact pass rusher. And they traded away their first-round pick next year in order to move up, like, five spots to get him. And it was like, are you serious?
That's not what I thought they were going to do.
Are you serious? That was a bizarre pick. It was so strange. And, you have to kind of be like, oh, we got to give him the benefit of the doubt. Well, I think the Saints coaches are good at developing players, especially on the offensive side of the football. I am not prepared to give them the benefit of the doubt on the way that their draft went. I thought they made some pretty serious mistakes. And all that said, I still am bullish on the Saints' performance potential for 2018. That again, I thought was a good example of a front office that was feeling themselves a little too much walking into that draft. Especially on day one.
They got told their dick was real big all last year. Right. So they bought the tightest pants they could find, and they might look stupid this year. So, yeah, that pick was – I had kind of forgotten about that.
They walked that in was the other pants. Well, yeah.
They traded up, and I had like six different ideas of what they were going to do there, and that wasn't one of them. I don't know.
No. What are some teams you're pretty positive on about what they did?
Honestly, something I wrote down just full on the NFC North.
All of them.
Okay. Green Bay needed defensive backs so badly. They can be a decent team if they can cover anybody and let Rodgers, if Rodgers is healthy all year. They got two great corners. I thought they're both values at the spot they got them at. I love the Bears getting Roquan. They got that road grader from Iowa. They got Miller to shore up the receivers. I like as much as we don't like running backs, I thought the Auburn kid was a little bit kind of undervalued. I like the Lions pick there. The Vikings obviously were a good team. They went to a conference championship, so their needs were minimal compared to, you know, teams drafting higher, but they had a depth to the line, to the D line. They got a tight end. They had a kicker.
Yep.
They drafted a kicker.
They needed a kicker so bad. That was such you kind of have to give them the.
I know. It was so high. So high to take
it
a
was,
kicker.
It was.
But it's like, you know, that's how. Oh, man. Just so self-conscious of that, that they don't have a kicker, that they, we're just going to take a kicker. Granted, best kicker, probably.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
What a good kicker, boy. Yeah, you know, there was four punters drafted. I don't know the stats.
The Seahawks traded up. We're going to get to the Seahawks.
Oh, there was a punter run.
They traded up to draft a punter, didn't they?
Yes.
Something like crazy like that happened. And
you know, there was a long snapper drafted.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Can't you just go sign those guys with the YMCA?
Of course. This is all of this speaks to just the state of the front offices in the NFL is just – it's in complete and total disarray. These are just – brutal picks.
There was a fullback drafted.
Yeah. Yeah. Good work, guys. Okay. All right. So a couple other notes that I had written down. I thought Bears getting Roquan Smith at the eighth pick was pretty freaking sick. He's going to be a difference maker for a long time on that unit. That was a great one. I really wanted them to, you know, if they hadn't gotten Quentin Nelson, Roquan Smith was the absolute best case scenario. The Bills trading up for Josh Allen is a disaster. I don't think they needed to trade up for him. I guess they needed to get ahead of the Cardinals. You know, going all the way up to seven was pretty ridiculous. The Tampa Bay Bucks went from looking like geniuses because they traded down out of the seven, and they desperately needed a defensive back. In particular, they could have used a high quality safety, and they trade down to 12 with the Bills. That what do you know? The best safety in the draft, in my opinion, Derwin James from Florida State, is still available at 12. A player that they had been linked to, you know, through every rumor in the, you know, up and down. Every draft board.
Yeah, that was supposed to be just a lock. That was supposed to be. That's yeah. He's going.
And, oh, no. They took a defensive tackle.
Good for the Chargers. Good for San Diego.
Good. It was great for San Diego. San Diego is now absolutely stacked in the secondary. They have a fantastic looking
I'm actually pumped about that defense.
Yeah, that defense is going to be able to play very aggressively. They're going to be able to play really aggressively in their front seven because they're going to have so much protection in the back, they're going to be able to really disrupt play. I mean, Joey Bosa might be a good look for defensive POY when we start to see some numbers popping, because he's
Propapalooza too.
Propapalooza too. The return of Propapalooza.
The revenge.
Yeah. Propapalooza's revenge. That, yeah, he has the potential to do something pretty special. Freaking Tampa Bay drafts a defensive tackle, puts him alongside Gerald McCoy. You didn't need that to address that part of your defense. It's the other parts of your defense that suck, you tools. I agree with you 100%. Packers did fantastically addressing some of their biggest issues. I thought the Cowboys had a great draft. They got plug and play players at a bunch of levels. I was secretly terrified was going to happen for the entirety of the draft. I was, because you had heard the Cowboys were kind of floating around. They were going to try to make a deal for Earl Thomas, and they were floating that third round pick. I was secretly panicked that I was going to see or hear breaking news that the Cowboys had traded for Gronkowski,
so paranoid about Patriots stuff.
I'm shocked Gronk didn't get traded. The way that the offseason has gone to this point, and the way that there's sort of this cold war brewing between Belichick and Brady, like Belichick to deal away Brady's most important, last and most important weapon wouldn't surprise me in the least, especially the way Gronk, you know, kind of went foul of Belichick in the offseason. And it would have made sense for Dallas to try to address that position through trade. And I don't know, what do you think would have, am I crazy thinking a third round pick would have gotten them Gronkowski? That's what they were floating for Earl Thomas. I don't know why the Seattle Seahawks didn't make that move. But what do you think would have taken to get Gronkowski in a trade?
A high third, maybe. I'd say low second.
Low second.
Especially if there was unhappiness. Who knows? Yeah, I don't know if it's just the stupid media or if there's actually something going on, because there's something new about Brady every day. It's almost like, well, it's the draft's over. Let's start talking about this again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably it.
What do you think of Oakland? Oakland's whole deal. Didn't love it.
I think we might have seen the last of Martavius Bryant for 2018. I can't imagine how he stays on the right side of the current NFL drug policy living in Oakland, California.
California, where weed's legal. Yeah. Well, to be fair, they're moving soon, so he won't be in California too long. They'll move to Nevada, where weed is legal.
Much safer.
He's fucked.
Yeah, they're moving from Oakland to Sin City, so that things will work out well for him, I'm sure.
He just got to make it through this year.
Yeah, right. I thought they took too risky of a player in the first round at Colton Miller at an offensive tackle. I think I was really disappointed. They needed to address the linebacker position more. And right after Colton Miller went, I thought one of the best linebackers in the draft, Tremaine Edwards from Virginia Tech, got drafted by the Bills. I thought that would have been a perfect pick for the Raiders, but they whiffed.
Any of the next three players would have been fine. Take a linebacker. I'd have been happy with any of those defenders.
Right. 100% agreed. 100% agreed. They needed to get an impact player on defense to go along with Khalil Mack, and they didn't. I thought the rest of their draft, they went into the draft process obviously saying we are going to load up on players that have high risk, high reward. I suppose high reward. That's subjective, I guess. But I thought.
They did that with their coach, so.
They did it with their coach. That's right. Raiders be Raiders, man.
Coach don't count against the cap, so they can spend whatever they want on that doofy old chuckles.
Yeah, and we're going to get to kind of some of these props that are popping now, but, I'm a hard, hard sell on the Raiders prospects for 2018.
Who do you think took the fullback? Just pop quiz on the spot. Just because I'm looking at shit. Pop draft quiz.
Who took the fullback? I heard. Think about the Steelers, right?
Steelers. You already knew the answer.
I had heard they did something dumb like that. Yeah.
Yeah. What position was drafted the most?
Well, what round did the Steelers take the fullback? Was it the seventh?
The fifth. No, it was the fifth. Oh, Christ.
All right. Okay.
What position was drafted the most? I got fun draft facts quiz.
Cornerback?
Linebacker.
See,
15%.
I don't even need to know.
15% of the draft was linebackers.
I don't even need to know what the strength of that position was relative to this draft to tell you that that right there is an example of – no, it doesn't. No way it doesn't make sense.
I love linebacker.
No, dude. All right,
you need fast linebackers.
We usually agree, so this is a good point to kind of diverge a little bit here. The linebacker position has been completely marginalized. You know how often you're playing nickel and dime now? In over the course of the game? It's like 60% of the time. Like, you have three linebackers on the field – maybe 30% of your snaps if you're in, a competitive game. If you're in a game where you got an easy lead and you're just, you're out there, just playing garbage defense, maybe they're getting more snaps. But, the linebacker, in my opinion, at least the speedy, aside from if you're running a 3-4 and that's how you're generating
quarterback pressure. That's what I'm wondering here. I wonder how many of these guys might play up on the line at some point.
If they're playing on the line and they're generating quarterback pressure, then it's a different aspect. But if you're drafting weak side linebackers to play in a 3-4, like 4-3, get out of here. Like, those guys are going to, they're going to play more special teams than they're playing defense. Nowadays your third and fourth cornerbacks are more important than your third and even potentially your second best linebacker. I mean, it's tough to say that the league gets it if cornerback was not the most drafted position, in my opinion.
I mean, it was up there. It was third.
Third. What was second? Wide receiver?
Yeah, it was wide receiver.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I'm sorry you hate the Roquan Smith.
Well, see, that's just it. Like, that's not.
I know. I'm so, just fucking with
you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There was. Yeah, there, and I out of one side of my mouth, I'm killing the Raiders for not taking a linebacker, and I'm praising the Bears for taking a linebacker, and I'm telling you, linebacker is so dumb to be drafted. But, like, overall, like, your day three picks, like, just take swings on cornerbacks. Get guys that you think you can develop into players that can get on the field to, you know, for those important, you know, sub packages. Like, that's the way you build depth for your team. If you're not getting the blue chip guy, or take a punter. Or take a fullback.
I loved how they went two punters in a row there, even. Like, it started, the Seahawks took that punter. And then later in the round, Green Bay took a punter, and Oakland, obviously Oakland, oh shit, punter run. We need to grab one. He's like the stupid guy in your fantasy football league that will draft whoever, if like three of one position goes in a row, you know, automatically he's just taking one.
Let it not be lost that the Oakland Raiders cut the second or third best punter in the league this year in the offseason. Marquette King was cut, and then they drafted a punter. So good job. You're running a well-run franchise right there, guys.
And the Jags got up, the Jaguars drafted a punter, but they did it at 247. Semi-acceptable to do that. Like, you know, we've made 7, 8, 9, whatever picks. Maybe we'll take a flyer on this punter because there's not much left. And I don't know. I can get behind that maybe, but, and congratulations again to the Packers for, they also won the draft by having the most picks.
Last
fun fact on the draft.
Oh, there you picks. Go. I think you have to give some credit to the teams that traded away picks for players, who are going to make impacts this year. There has been a lot of empirical evidence that is telling us that the development cycle now for NFL players has been so shortened due to the new collective bargaining agreement rule. Makes it awfully tough to develop these players into, you know, and these prospects into players in a short time frame. Teams that are trying to win now, trading their picks for impact players, I think is pretty sound strategy. Patriots did a little bit of that, but they still, like, the Patriots roster is still a problem for me. I still think they win the East going away, but the likelihood of them getting back to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl, I think is pretty low this year.
That's a good segue.
Relative to prices, other years. Yeah, relative to other years, I guess I'll say. So do you see some of these prices, Prop?
Just right before that, the Patriots won the AFC. It was a little bit of a dogfight, but they looked very much like the Patriots of old in that second half. Who in the AFC has improved their lot enough to do something about that? I don't know that the Jaguars or the Steelers have made any market improvements. I think maybe the Chargers, and one could, if you're on the Mahomes train, which for the record I'm not, you could say something about the Chiefs, I guess. They do have Mahomes go to college.
We'll see a Big 12 kid. He's a Big 12-er.
No, I don't know. I just don't like him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They do have a lot of dynamic playmakers down there. Mahomes is Big 12. Yeah, Texas Tech. I could see the Chiefs. If Mahomes does half as well as people are hyping, I must be already. The Chiefs could do something. what was the other one? Oh, Texans. Texans are a cute little story. But as far as the Patriots to win the AFC again,
who's stopping them?
Like, who's stopping them besides themselves right now?
No one in the AFC East.
NFC teams have all got better.
The AFC East. All right, I guess here's how I would paint the picture of the AFC right now. The East has three of the five worst teams in the AFC, which means the Patriots, even if they have a very bad year and go 10-6, they are still winning the East likely.
By three games,
yeah. And the price of that prop is ridiculous. Put that in an open parlay or put it in a mega parlay. You're not going to have to worry about that. And that'll be a nice little New Year's gift. The North, I think, is going to be very competitive. In particular, the Steelers and the Ravens, I see match up very well with each other. I think the Ravens are being undersold as a viable contender in the AFC, personally. I think...
What's that price?
That's about 220, 240, something like that. Let me see. I'll put a little wager on that. Oh, sorry, plus 450 to win the AFC North. Steelers minus 260, I think, is ludicrous. I think you can get Field over the Steelers now, and there'll be opportunities in season to come back on the Steelers if you want to just scalp some money. Overall, on all the other divisions, AFC North, AFC South, AFC West, I think it's going to be a pretty transition-y year, right? Like, the status quo of Pats, Steelers, Chiefs that we've had over the last few seasons, I think is going to be challenged in the North and in the West especially. You're seeing, right away, you mentioned it, Mahomes is the new quarterback for Kansas City. He has yet to put together a full season of starts. And what did he start this week 17 last year, I think, and put a pretty decent meaningless game together?
Yeah, they had that.
Yeah, and I think the Chiefs and the Chargers are legitimate contenders for the West. The Broncos are probably sneaky, just given that they've got a relatively competitive quarterback now to go along with a rehabilitated defense.
I like the Chargers. Back to the Ravens quick. Over 0.5 plus 180, Lamar Jackson starts.
I could see plus 180?
Plus 180 for him to start one single game at least.
That might be the worst. Did you make that lineup or do you see that somewhere?
No, it's on Bovada.
Wow. That is a really, really, really good look.
Yeah, I'm staring at it.
Wow.
I kind of saved that one.
Interesting. Okay, so here are my thoughts on that. Lamar Jackson, I think, is going to be a legitimate quarterback in this league. I think the Ravens trading up to the 32nd pick to take him in the first round, so they have a fifth-year option on him, was very smart. I think the fact that they have an offensive scheme now and offensive coordinators, the likes of Greg Roman, who notably coordinated for Colin Kaepernick, guys who developed scheme for mobile quarterbacks, I think they are all in on making Lamar Jackson the future of their franchise. You combine that with the fact that Joe Flacco had serious back problems last year. He is a candidate for getting hurt anytime in, playing in the black and blue AFC North. He can get hurt anytime. On top of all of that, you could have Lamar Jackson beat him out in training camp for all I can tell you. He's that good of an athlete, and they could decide, hey, look, this is our, we're not, I think the Flacco contract is effectively due up at the end of this year, so they can move on. And on the other side of the coin, this could light a fire under Flacco. He comes in and plays the best year of football of his life, or the second best year, I guess, after the year they won the Super Bowl.
I was going to say, he had a pretty good postseason run at one point.
Yeah, Yeah, and what? Let's say that they have home field locked up, or they're 12-4, and they're a seed. They have a bye locked up. What's to say they don't start Lamar Jackson against the Browns in week 17, like the way Mahomes got to start against the Raiders or whatever week 17 last year. So I think there are a lot of scenarios where Lamar Jackson gets on the field for a start this year. I think that line at +180 over half a game is pretty ridiculous. What do you think?
Yeah, I like everything you're saying. Plus, I just want to see him play.
Oh, absolutely. Same. Oh, man. Interesting. I'm going to have to track that down. Sounds good, man. Okay. Let's see. So the toughest – so you're more into the Chargers in the West. I think – it's a pretty clear three-horse race for me. If I had to tip my hand one way, I guess the Chargers, although I have problems with Anthony Lynn as a coach. I don't think he's particularly good. I have problems with the fact that 8 of their games are played in a soccer stadium where there's negative home field advantage. I have problems with the, Philip Rivers is getting to the, he's the same draft class as Eli Manning. His legs go at some point in time. Yes. Could they be this year? You never really know. I'm a little wary of the Chargers being a legitimate contender. All that said, I think their defense is going to be stacked. They have weapons loaded up all around. But again, speaking of weapons loaded up all around, like they had one of the most effective tight ends in the league last year in Hunter Henry, and they didn't use the guy. Like their offensive scheme, like they just have some boneheads putting together offensive game plans.
They're going to be going to Hunter Henry a lot more this year.
Well, you say that now. I would have thought that last year too.
They made it pretty clear with their move at tight end. So
okay, well, let's hope that they realize what everyone else is realizing. And I think that the Raiders at +220 to win the West. Who made this line? Why did what? Like, how could the favorites to win the West are the Raiders? Are you joking? I think field over the Raiders in the West is probably one of those bets we laugh about at Halloween. Like, wow, that was easy. It's -260 right now. That makes for a money parlay, like in my opinion. Yeah. and that leaves the AFC South, and boy, is that one tough to handicap. The most talented roster outside of the quarterback position is not even close as the Jaguars. They brought in a couple more studs, including a guy I thought was one of the sneaky best free agents and the offensive lineman. What was his name? Andrew Norville, the kid from Carolina.
Great
they,
easy pickup.
They've added in the draft. They decided to stack strength on strength for some reason. And that's fine, I guess, because they can afford that opportunity. They do that. But they're going to have a very, very effective pass rush. They're going to have a very good secondary. And I think the defense is going to be able to win them most of their home games off the bat and then a handful of their road games, especially against the opponents where they're playing weaker quarterbacks. So, Jags to win 10 games seems completely reasonable. Is that enough to win the South is a different question because – Titans now have a more competent coach, possibly. I don't know. I don't know if I think the jury's out on Vrabel, I guess. And the Texans will have Watson back. How he responds to knee surgery is always a question. Sometimes we've seen these guys come off of knee surgeries where mobility is a huge part of their game, and it has some effect on their decision-making when they're in the pocket. So we will see if that has an impact on Deshaun Watson at all. And the Indianapolis Colts, who the freak knows? Andrew Luck is a complete...
That's what makes me want to stay away from that division is, like, he...
It's a mystery, man.
He top five quarterback at some points in his career. Like, and then just... You almost kind of forget about the guy. Like, if it weren't for the great Twitter parody account, maybe I would have completely forgotten about him.
If I wasn't in his book club, I might not even remember him,
This is true. I don't. I have no idea. I love the Texans, but it's tough because you tell me the Jaguars have gotten worse. Tougher schedule. Granted, that's a great, you know, great point that's been brought up. They do have a first place schedule. It's pretty brutal down the stretch for them. And, you know, there wasn't pressure on them last year, I don't think. There'll be a little more added pressure as they're expected to do well again. They made it to the conference championship. That might weigh a little heavier on them as the season goes on. And like you said, with the knee, with Deshaun, I think they were talking about Brady after his nasty one in the first minute of the game.
Yeah.
It's so mental. You know, they say your knee can recover, but you got to get your brain to wrap around that you can plant and you can jump and you can dance off that knee again.
It's not sometimes fair to compare. Yeah. It's not fair to compare him, I don't think, to RG3, but we saw RG3 was never the same player. It's not fair to compare him to Tom Brady. Again, very different players. But he's in the middle of there somewhere, and it's going to have some impact. Andrew Luck, it's a mystery. You got to keep your eye open for news and information floating on Twitter about his throwing status and his weight. The last thing I heard, he was still not throwing a regulation football. What?
I think one of those. He's got one of those Nerf ones.
Yeah.
With the tail behind it. Remember that had the whistles in it. So when you threw it, it whistles.
He likes playing with that better.
I think that's what they got him whipping around the gridiron right now. Which I fucking love that ball. That's a great ball. But
you hear quotes from his camp. You hear quotes from Luck himself. Guy sounds like he has PTSD, man. And I'm not trying to make light of PTSD, which is a terrible thing, but like playing behind that offensive line and with that team for a handful of years early in his career has done something to him. And it's no longer a foregone conclusion that we'll see him, you know, compete for an AFC title again, in my opinion.
Some of his press, he makes it sound like, you know, the injury. Other people talk about it like, oh, yeah, he's on his way back. And then he has that conference and it's like, yeah, I mean, once they reattach my arm and, you know, then maybe like 12 more months of rehab and like Jesus.
Yeah, I'm waiting for they're trying to regrow an arm for me at Purdue. And once that's regrown and it's reattached, I'll be ready to go. And it's like, wait, what? Excuse me? He went to Germany for some crazy procedure. I'm still extremely suspect about what the hell happened with the McDaniels coaching thing. Part of that, you could convince me pretty easily that some of that decision making had to do with the fact that Andrew Luck wasn't 100%. I really have no clue. It's tough for me to really nail down the AFC South, and I guess I'm interested in the Jaguars at +200, really, when it comes down to it, because I have the highest confidence in the defensive side of that unit. That defensive unit is the best in the NFL. You could probably make a case that there are some NFC teams that should be in the conversation, like mini Philly Rams, but I think still, though, the Jags, top to bottom, that defensive roster is the most talented and the most complete. They play with swagger, and they are going to wipe the floor with a lot of these teams. And +200 might be a good look. And hitch my wagon to Blake Bortles. I guess at this point, if I had to take looks in the AFC, I'm looking for the Pats at -580. I'm looking for the Ravens at +450 as a long shot. I like the Jags at +200. That's a nice plus money number. And the Chargers at +220. Maybe the Broncos at +375 is worth a sniff. I'm going to have to do a little bit more schedule studying on Broncos and Chargers to see if I can sort out who's going to kind of be 8-1, 7-2-ish at the halfway point. See if we can get some, you know, because I think, you know, these are the kind of divisions where it's even across the board like this, where if you can kind of make a case that some team is set up to have early season success, then and you're going to be able to come back on a pretty favorable number on the field about halfway through the season. So, good example was the Chiefs last year. They were what, 5-0?
Yeah.
5-1, and then for a while it looked like they weren't going to win the division, and they only squeaked it out at the very tail end. What's that?
Yeah, I'm. Maybe I have a little bit of, I mean, another PTSD joke. Like, just the Case Keenum had a great season. That was a very good defense. You could go look at some advanced stats from some of these great Twitter guys that talk about quarterbacks all day long and how much he got bailed out by his receivers.
Yeah, it's true.
Everybody, I talk to more Vikings fans than most because I live in Minnesota. We talk sports about the Vikings all the time. Everyone was just waiting. Like, oh man, can Keenum keep this up? That was like our whole year. Oh man. Oh, he in the second quarter there when he threw across his body, and I'm like, oh, there it goes. And like all year, we just waited for that other shoe to drop. So I worry. I like what the Broncos did in the draft. I like the roster. I worry about that move. And it's not like they overpaid him. They can move on if they need to. I don't like the other quarterbacks in the roster, but I'd love Denver a lot better if they had a different quarterback.
Yeah, the receivers bailed him out, and you know what else was pretty important for him? Was playing in that dome. The surface made it easier for the receivers to get open, which helped on top of the fact that the conditions inside were pretty favorable for him. And he played inside in Detroit as well. And did he have a couple other indoor games? He played indoors at Atlanta. He was indoors a lot last year. That all changes.
Yeah. I think the Saints was in Minneapolis, but they played at Atlanta. They obviously played at Detroit. And that might have been it, but that's 10 indoor games, or unless the London game was a home game technically. Either way, it's a lot of dome games.
It was a lot of domers. Okay. Let's talk about the NFC North, because it's interesting to me. You got pretty much even split here, at least they on the open. They're giving you free shot. Call your shot, Packers or Vikings, both plus 140. They're not giving much respect at all to the Lions or Bears, both about plus 700. I know we've talked to Suma last week, and we talked in the past and a lot online, like the Bears are rising as a team. Plus 700 is a nice number, but it's also a lot to ask them to outright win this division against Aaron Rodgers and against the ridiculously talented Vikings team. How do you see this shaking out? Shaping up.
I should recuse myself from this one.
Okay, I'll set it up. Then. Bears. And this, a lot of this comes down to schedule for me, I think. And you have to do some schedule studying here, because I think you're going to be able to get two or three bets in a pretty favorable plus money numbers and not really worry too much about this.
We've been over this. I like this. Do this.
I think Packers, and I, you know, maybe some of this is hopeful. But I think the Packers are going to take money because Aaron Rodgers is back and because they're a public team. And you look at their schedule, and there is a 5-week stretch coming out of their bye that is absolutely horrific. Do you have the schedule handy by any chance?
I do, in fact.
Can you tell me, they spend 4 weeks on the road out of 5 coming out of their bye. And their road games are against opponents that I'll qualify as unfavorable. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as worried about it. If you want to say the easiest road opponent that they have out of the four would be the Seahawks, but it's also a short week.
That's right.
You got to go to St. Louis and play the Rams, which will also be in L.A.
I was going to say, you're going to St.
Fucking
Louis.
Fucking A, I can't. It's been
years. You're going to have a long walk.
They got to play the Boston Patriots. so you got to, yeah, you go to L.A. to play the Rams, Foxborough. You get a little bit of respite at home versus the Dolphins. And then short week to Seattle, followed by the bank up in Minneapolis.
At Minneapolis, yeah. So it's a nice little five-week stretch with four on the road, including a West Coast trip, followed by an East Coast trip, including a short turnaround from a home to a road to play in some pretty hostile environments. You look at this and you think, okay, well, you know, if everything goes perfect for the Packers before that, I think the best I can convince myself here is you're talking about a 3-2 run, but much more likely you're looking at 1-4 and 2-3, something like that. And in that instance, you're going to see them kind of fall out of the standings potentially, and things could look like they're going to be struggling for a playoff spot. But then they round out the season with five extremely winnable games. The toughest of these is probably home against the Falcons, I guess. Maybe
I don't know. At the December Bears. December 16th. That's bear weather.
That is bear weather.
It's never easy to go down. I don't care how bad they are. It's never easy to go down to Soldier Field and win.
That's true, especially when I'm kind of sneaky high on the Bears this year anyway. So, they got Cardinals. They got Falcons at home. Yeah, they got to go at the Bears. They got to go at the Jets, and then they get the Lions at home in Week 17. So, if you don't follow the NFL closely, you know who's good late in the season. You know who's good down the stretch. You know who likes to put together prolonged winning streaks in the months of November and December is Aaron Rodgers. He typically does not play his best in the first quarter of the season, first half of the season. Sometimes we didn't get to see much of usefulness at last year because of his collarbone injury. But Rodgers and Green Bay are late in horse racing terms, they're closers, and they come on fast late. And I would look for, after they play that game at Minnesota, if they take an L there, if they're on the outside looking in, if he survives. If they're on the outside looking in the playoffs, I'm all about buying into some Packers future money at that time, which really then just sets up, okay, well, what do you, you're probably looking at plus 300, plus 500 or something like that. And so that leaves, okay, well, who do you want to start the season? And, God, the time to buy into the Vikings, if you had to ask me, is probably going to be after week five. The Vikings get three of their toughest games out of the way in the first five. Did you see the Vikings schedule? Week two at week two they're at the Green Packers. Bay. Week four they're at the Rams.
Green Bay, at least. And then
Week four they're at the Rams, and then week five they're at the Eagles. And so it's entirely possible.
And if they're less than 5-0, you should probably grab a little bit because the price will be good.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then they go through some of their more winnable games in the next stretch here. I'd say the Saints is a toss-up, but maybe the rest of these are winnable. So there's opportunities to bet both of these favorites later in the season, in my opinion, which means maybe take a shot on the Lions or take a shot on the Bears preseason.
No, not the Lions. Well, Suma's high on the Lions.
Suma's high on the Lions. I'm high on the Bears.
I'm high on the Bears, but I love my Vikings. What's the status of Carson Wentz? I'm looking at week five. Is that going to be Foles revenge game, or do we have to play Wentz? I thought he was out like 6 weeks to start the season, they're thinking, because it was such a late injury.
I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. I'm not sure, man.
I think that might be Foles still.
Wow. Interesting.
That is a weird list of quarterbacks we're going to play. You're going to go Garoppolo,
it's a road game, right? Yep.
Garoppolo, Rodgers, Josh Allen. Who's starting for the Bills? Josh Allen?
What week is it? Is that week three?
Week three.
AJ McCarron's probably going to break his collarbone Week one. Week two, you're probably going to lose. Who's their second guy? He sucks too. I can't remember. You're going to lose your terrible backup. And then week three, I guess, yeah, you're probably going to see Josh Allen in there.
Oh, that would be fun. Oh, how do you forget a name like Nathan Five-Pick Peterson? Peterson. Oh, I didn't mean to say his goddamn name right.
Peterman. Okay. I forgot he's still on the roster. I thought maybe they cut him. Okay. All right. Well, you know, maybe Josh Allen's there. Maybe he's not. Who knows? They're saving Josh Allen for cold weather, man. Did you hear about how good he is in cold weather because he played in cold weather? We're not going to see Josh Allen until Thanksgiving, probably. when it gets real cold. And only in the outdoor games in Buffalo. So
I click around a lot on this, and I was clicking on Peterman. Now I'm on Peterman's wife's Facebook. on her Twitter, rather. And she's got a clip, like, so proud of this moment, and it's Peterman throwing a garbage touchdown against Minnesota when they're down by, like, 17. Like, granted, none of us will ever throw a touchdown in the NFL, which it's amazing. Man, I will never be able to wash my mouth of that first half where he started.
No, that was career-defining. That was life-defining. Yep. I think I'm probably going to take a swing on the Bears to win the North, just because I like the way their early schedule looks. If they're out there at 4-1 and Green Bay's at 4-1 and then Green Bay goes on a skid in that middle stretch. Maybe we catch Green Bay at some nice plus money, and maybe we catch Minnesota at some nice plus money, and we got a nice little three-way go. You know what else I like is not as a field over the Lions. I got that in a mega parlay, but I'm going to save that for the end of this little conversation. I think can you talk me out of any interest in the Cowboys winning the East? Am I a little over...
You are not
overexcited. Am I a little?
Not. I don't think Dak is bad. I don't think the Cowboys are bad, but they're. I mean, how many games did Zeke miss? How much turmoil and uncertainty was there over that bullshit?
A lot.
How many games did Tyron Smith miss?
Too
many.
How
many games did Sean Lee miss? Like, those are huge. Huge pieces for them. Dak was not the same without his nookie blankie in Zeke and a great maybe he's a top three left tackle.
Yes. Yes.
Easily. Top three in my mind. Like two, that's huge.
Two seasons ago,
so big.
Two seasons ago, I would have said he was number one. Last season, he was dinged up. It was tough to really make that case. He took a lot of holding penalties. But two seasons ago, Tyron Smith was the best left tackle in football. And among the better players in football, I thought. If he's back, if Zeke's back, they're going to be in great shape.
He can make a run.
They got an easier schedule than the Eagles. The Eagles, you're right, are dealing with Carson Wentz thing. At
that number, I take a stab at the Cowboys.
Yeah, I would too. But at some point, I absolutely have to get out of the fading the Eagles business because it's not a good business to be in. It's not fading Doug Peterson.
You're the guy that owns a major store.
It's not a good business to be in. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. I just don't understand why I can't make money.
No one is buying my pagers.
No one is buying them. So I'm a little nervous about that, but I think Cowboys at +375 is a pretty generous price. I think the Giants and the Redskins are overpriced at 700 and 700 respectively. I don't think either team has a realistic shot to win this division. The Giants, I think. I'm holding out for my prop on Giants to finish fourth in the East. Which leads us to some more interesting discussion maybe. I don't have a ton on the West. I'll say the Rams probably are the rightful favorite at -125. I'm probably not going to parlay them or single bet them. It's not an enticing number, and too much could go wrong. And I don't love Jared Goff with a year of tape. People have a year of tape on him being able to kind of recreate his amazing, sophomore. He wasn't really that amazing. His high quality sophomore season last year. Potential we see him slide a little bit, which could create some turmoil in the West. I don't like the Seahawks though. Seeing the Seahawks here at +380, I don't like at all. Did you see that their number for the Super Bowl is 80-1? You look at something like that and you're like, geez. And you're like, that's crazy. They should get that. And then you start doing some math, looking at a schedule, looking at their roster, and you're like, no, that's right. No, that's about right. 80-1. They have Russell Wilson. You know what? Yeah. What did you make of some of the Seahawks moves? What do we make of this team right now?
Oh no, everything was horseshit. Their draft was horseshit. They moved up
to
running back. They don't have an offensive line, so that running back will just join Wilson in running for his life behind the line of scrimmage. I had this conversation with Suma. I guess I retract my previous statement about the punters. They were probably right because there's going to be a lot of 4th and 15, 4th and 18, 4th and 23 after like two runs for -5 and a big sack.
Yeah.
So
if they
maybe
don't flip the field, they're screwed.
Flip the field. Maybe that's a good thing. A team you're not talking about. And I think maybe this is not something that'll happen, but there may be a chance to buy out of this one. Arizona's defense
is
not talked about, and they're 13-1 to win this division with a schedule that they don't have the easiest schedule, but there's a lot of winnable games. Going back to last year, everybody loved the running back. He wasn't there. He's going to be back.
Good point, man. O-line is still a problem.
The O-line is a huge problem. If they get any better there, if David Johnson stays healthy, if their receivers do anything, Sam Bradford only really played the one game.
It's true.
He went 27 of 32 for 346 and 3 touchdowns. That was the Sam Bradford that got drafted first. Was he first overall? Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's who he was. He can play at a high level if he's not in traction up at at the orthopedic. If he's not in an orthopedic surgeon's office, and instead he's on the field playing, he could be very good. I think with that defense, a smart quarterback, an all-pro running back coming back, and if they can get anything out of that offensive line, they have a shot to be in the race later in the season, where I think 13-1 just kind of silly. I'm not picking them to win the division, but if you have a 13-1 in your pocket and they're within a game of the Rams, you might be able to buy out of that for some money.
Yeah, I mean, if something squirrely happens in the NFC, it's going to be in the West.
That's what I'm feeling here.
And this kind of boils down to the Rams have poor home field advantage. The Rams have a quarterback who is a little bit of fool's gold. I don't know. Jared Goff is not inspiring at all. And if he has a down year, it would not surprise me in the least. You know what else would not surprise me in the least? Hearing something like, oh, it's week 3 of the preseason and Sam Bradford's retiring.
Yeah, no, that would happen.
So something crazy could happen. I just don't know if it's going to be the Cardinals. On the other hand, you don't want to get behind the public team like the Niners, especially when they have some serious question marks on some of their personnel that are important, like Reuben Foster, who may or may not be a horrible human being. I thought they did a good job in the draft, the 49ers, that is. And, I think you're probably looking at the next really good head coach, I believe, in Shanahan. If something crazy happens, is it going to be the Niners? Maybe. The Niners are, +320? That's pretty juicy.
I didn't love their draft.
You didn't love it? Okay.
I mean, I think it wasn't a sexy pick. It was probably the right pick at that spot to get the linemen.
I don't want to spoil our division-by-division previews later on in the summer, but I'm going to put you on the spot at some point about is Jimmy G, is the hype has it gone too far? You know, it's
probably
has.
They won a game where they didn't score a touchdown.
They have a very good field goal kicker. Yeah, it's that wasn't it against the Cardinals though.
Yeah, there was a couple. The Cardinals had like two or three games like that where it was all. I think it was all field. I think that one was against the Bears.
You know, I was on the over on some of those too. I was definitely on the over on
26 yard field goals.
Oh yeah, so many. They were bad in the red zone. Yeah, even with a good schemer like Shanahan, they could not get touchdowns some of those games. Okay, well, I guess that leaves the most interesting one, I suppose, which is the NFC South. The Saints to me at +210 are a pretty clear value. They're over under on wins, I think I saw posted was like 10. Over on 10 is pretty clear value. There's something that I'm not seeing that the books are seeing with regards to vulnerabilities on this team. I have great respect for Sean Payton. I have great respect for Drew Brees. I think that the roster is – I think that you're not a Sean Payton guy. You're not a Greg Williams guy. He was the bounty gate guy, right? Sean Payton just got caught in the punishment.
Check on the side.
Yeah, that's a good point. It was – fair point. So. They have a winnable schedule. I think they're going to be – comfortable favorites over the likes of the Bucks and the Panthers when we get to those matchups. Even if they split with the Falcons, who I think are a pretty formidable opponent, there's a lot of games on here I like them to have pretty comfortable advantage in. Their home field advantage in the dome is legit. They get the Rams in the dome. They get the Eagles in the dome. That right there is huge, I think, in terms of kind of giving them pole position to get potentially the one seed in the NFC, which makes me a buyer on Saints, not just to win the division at +210, but I like their looks to win the NFC, and I like their looks to win the Super Bowl. It would take something pretty spectacular in terms of sophomore slumps from all of their young talent and Drew Brees getting hurt for this NFC South to be in doubt, in my opinion. Yet here they sit as effectively co-favorites with the Falcons. Do you get what's going on with this line?
I mean, wouldn't you say the Falcons underachieved last year?
I would, yeah. I would.
They had some tough schedule. Like, they played Minnesota as tough as possible at home.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I mean, that was a tight game that they probably could have won that. That's just a tough defense when they come in and you hold somebody to, I think Minnesota scored like 15, and I mean they really didn't have a chance at the end. Yeah. They had games and games and games like that where you don't want to make the joke about them not being a closer, but
yeah, they had
Atlanta's
the game.
Atlanta's a very good team. And they let, I mean, they're not that far removed from being pretty much winning a Super Bowl that they should have won. And, yeah. they beat the tar out of some people, last year too. They had some good games.
They also lost to the Bills.
Has Atlanta, they had some real head scratchers like that.
They lost to the Dolphins. They were 13 or 14 point favorites to the Dolphins at home and they lost.
They just slept walk into that game, and that was ugly.
Julio Jones dropped a game-winning touchdown against, or a game-tying touchdown against the Panthers. They had some head-scratching moments, and they let teams, even in the games, yeah, you're right, they beat the shit out of the Packers in week two. That was impressive.
They should have been in the NFC Championship game.
First and goal. That's absolutely true. Yeah. No, you know how much money it would have saved me if we could have knocked the Eagles out that week? God damn. It would have been great. The NFC was theirs for the taking last year, and they never put together their best effort. It was like classic Super Bowl hangover. Do they bounce back from that, or is too much been lost? It's very tough for me to tell. You know, their defense, all last year I was sort of like, okay, this is a transition year for this team. Like, their defense is still a year away. They have some talent, they're a year away. Their offense was going to take a step backwards. That was pretty clear because they lost Shanahan as their coordinator and they got drunk Sarkisian. And they absolutely, you know, underachieved. Absolutely. That should have been a 12-win team. They almost lost to the Jets, for crying out loud. They had some really brutal...
To be fair, a lot of people almost lost to the Jets.
The Jets
were in, like, so many games. The Jets are close. They're so close.
They did. They might be close.
Jets AFC East right now.
Oh, no. Get out of town. Give me some Jets. 14-1? Give me some Jets over wins, but I don't want anything to do with them to win the East.
I like Tom Brady.
What's their wins total? Isn't it probably like 6 or something? You can probably get to 7 or 8 wins with the Jets.
I take whoever they start at quarterback, I'm taking over Hoyer.
Yeah, Darnold.
Darnold over Hoyer.
Over Hoyer. See,
your division is Darnold, Hoyer, McCarron, and Tannehill. Give me Darnold.
You think Tannehill's going to be better?
Brady retired. I'm reading Twitter. He's done.
Okay. You're reading the tea leaves, or you're actually reading a news story that I haven't read yet?
No, just don't get all worried. Breaking out in hives out there.
If it was a breaking news and you told, like, I'm not going to be floored. Like, there's a weird Cold War going on in Foxborough. It's bizarre. I have no idea what's going on. Anyway, let me kind of wrap this up then with a question for you. I threw together a wacky parlay here, just kind of gut threw it together so that I could have something lock in some of these opening prices. And I was curious, who blows this? It's an 8-teamer. I got the Pats to win the East, -580. Field over the Browns in the North. Field over the Colts in the South. Field over the Raiders in the West. Field over the Giants in the East. Field over the Lions in the North. Field over the Bucks in the South. And field over the Seahawks in the West. I'm basically saying there's no chance the Pats win the East, and I'm saying that there's no chance that we see a division winner come out of Browns, Colts, Raiders, Giants, Lions, Bucks, Seahawks. Are you with me on that? This is paying 2-1.
I can get down with that. That's a nice little Christmas present.
Anyone? Yeah, this will be graded on 12/30/18. So it's in the queue for 7 months.
You got to figure out what a bottle of Dom Perignon costs and then bet half of it.
There you go.
That's your New Year's.
That is a great call. I love that. That is funny as hell. Let's do this. 2-1. So
you're going to have to like put that on Twitter. I didn't listen to everything, so I want to bet that.
Okay.
Too.
Okay. Yeah. Browns, Colts, Raiders. I'm fading the Browns, Colts, Raiders, Giants, Lions, Bucks, Seahawks. Okay. Yeah,
I'll record this.
Yeah, I will record this. Yeah, I guess, so you can give me some feedback later then on who you think blows that. And I'm going to laugh when it's the Patriots because Tom Brady retires in a week or something. Okay. Good deal, man. You want to talk something else? I think we covered pretty much everything.
Yeah, just let's plan on sitting down and do some division previews here in about, what is it, May 1st?
Yeah,
August?
August 15th-ish. Yeah, something like that.
Are we not going to talk football for a while now?
I suppose, man. It's kind of depressing, huh?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. We'll figure something out.
Speaking of depressing, I've been getting my absolute ass kicked betting these NBA playoffs game by game. It is really something. I don't think I'm like ready to like quit this, but I'm like, I just should bet series and enjoy these game by game instead of trying to find the right angle on a side or a total. It started out poorly where I was trying to go for some extremes because historically there's some big misses by the bookmakers early on in series, and it takes a little while for them to adjust, and so you can usually hit some alt spreads and alt totals and do pretty well. Unfortunately, my reads were pretty much ass backwards on the extremes. I was going way under on games that were over by the end of the third quarter, and vice versa, and dig myself a little bit of a hole and have yet to find my groove on these game by games. And it's especially frustrating because I was 8-for-8 on series predictions heading into round one. And, you know, the teams, we were high on upsets for the Jazz and the Pelicans.
We called the Pelicans, the Jazz.
We were
I hit a nice four team. I mean, it only paid like plus 250-ish. Not even like plus 238. I hit a nice one of those. I did an 8-team parlay with some series props, and it was 6-0-1, and all the Cavs needed to do was close out game 6 to cash it at a reduced. It would have paid, it originally was about 12-1, it would reduce to about plus 990.
All the
Cavs had to do, was finish it out. So I mean, it was dead going into game 7. They needed to cover by, it was either Cavs under six and a half, or I don't remember. Either way, the Cavs needed to win game 6, and it did not happen. And some of the other ones were laughable. I had the Pelicans plus 2 games. I had the Celtics plus games. I mean, some of them came through in spades.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
You know,
Warriors under 6.5 games.
Yeah, Warriors minus 1.5 games.
Yeah, right.
They were minus 2. Either way, thanks. Fuck LeBron for.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, actually, not. LeBron's great.
Yeah, he is amazing.
The rest of the team is so bad. They're hanging right now.
It's a case of the Belichicks, though. The LeBron, the player, is amazing. LeBron, the GM, has put him in this situation.
LeBron made were not great. It turns out,
It turns out they were not good. It turns out LeBron, I knew he was capable of this level. I did not expect to see it in round one. I don't think he expected to have to bust it out in round one. But what he did against the Pacers, whenever they needed it, he pulled it out against the Pacers, and it was pretty damn impressive. And you know, it's. You know, his legs are going to go at some point, you have to think. And you know, you kind of want to just wait and see when it happens. Probably going to happen during the Toronto series if it goes 7. If not, then I would expect it to happen in the Eastern Conference Finals. But the players 4 through 5 on the floor with LeBron, no matter what combination you come up with, are they're effectively a G League squad. Kevin Love, man, he was awful in the first series. I don't know what's going on with them. I know he hurt jammed his finger or whatever, but boy, has he been bad.
I forget. Can we go back to football?
Sure.
Just because I opened up like every sports book I have an account on, and this, I told you this, has since been converted to Bitcoin right now. There's nothing in this one, but I figured I'd check out my bookie. Because they have some fun ones, and they have all the other stuff, but they have Where Does Bryant Lands props.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
nobody has that. I love that.
I've never seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you think he lands? I'll tell you if you are getting a good number.
I'll give you the top 3 odds. I'll give you guesses. Giants, Ravens, Raiders.
Ooh, Giants are plus 350, which is not the favorite. The Ravens, huh? I'm not even seeing them. That was a terrible pick. Oakland's 12-1.
Interesting. The Baltimore Ravens, they're not the favorite, huh? I thought they were kind of at some point in negotiations with them.
They were, but he spurned their advances. So okay. Houston is the favorite on this, plus 250.
What?
And then Green Bay 4-1, Washington plus 580, then San Fran, New England. Oh, any other team, I guess, is plus 350. That's
bad. I mean, this is if you have first you of all
20-1. If 20-1, he signs with the Cowboys again.
That's incredible. That seems crazy. So
first respect all, to LeBron.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, if you have my money at my bookie, I don't know why the odds there are absolutely insane. But you know, all that said, you know, that's the kind of thing you read about or hear a news nugget when it first gets posted and race there and get a bet in before they close that line down, because I don't think they know at all. And some of those numbers are pretty favorable. Okay. So, you know, state of the NBA playoffs, besides me losing my ass and giving back everything I have fought and hard for to win over the course of the season, I mean, this is still the Warriors to lose the title. Steph Curry comes back tonight. They have a pretty comfortable advantage over the Pelicans in terms of scheme. It would be shocking to me if that series went particularly long, although I do think the Pelicans can compete, cover some spreads for us, which means back the Warriors. The Rockets look pretty impressive in game one against the Jazz. The Jazz looked like they kind of succeeded in winning and kind of validating their series and their season and their approach in beating the Thunder. I don't expect them to make a particularly competitive series out of this with the Rockets, because the Rockets just have way too much firepower. They're going to need, I don't know what the Jazz are going to be able to do, because the Rockets have the personnel to do what the Thunder did late in the series against the Jazz, where they were just switch and totally frustrating the Jazz. The Rockets can do that as well. And I would expect you to see Rockets, you know, the Jazz continue to struggle to score, keep up with the Rockets. So Rockets Warriors looks like it's going to be on, and I'm pretty excited for that one. In the East, surprising, amazing performance from the Celtics. They continue to lose players, but they thumped the Sixers in game one. That was pretty amazing bit of coaching that we're seeing. Pretty impressive bit of coaching we're seeing from Brad Stevens. And for whatever reason, like, you start to pare down some of the talented parts of the Celtics roster, and like, guys know their roles, what they're supposed to step up into, and the other teams are not prepared for it at first look. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Sixers have the adjustments they need to come back in this one. They were exposed pretty badly defensively. And there's a couple of players on the Sixers, in particular Bellinelli and Ilyasova and Redick, that were huge parts of their offense. And you can only really have one of those guys on the floor at the same time. So they're going to have to come up with a new way of replacing that offense and getting some guys on the floor that can play better defense, at least match up better around the perimeter, where the Celtics absolutely burned the Sixers in game one. You got a prediction in that one? I know you had some strong feelings before it started. How about after seeing game one?
You know, a series never starts. It's not started until an away team wins. You got to steal one. Boy, they looked good, though. That was not great. I do have futures on both teams to win the East. But one of them is at a much bigger number, and I would prefer them to get through.
You're looking for the Sixers, I suppose.
Yeah. I got 13-1 to win the East.
That's a great good get, man.
And it's only like 3-1 on the Celtics, which I think that series goes 6-7. It'll be fun. We'll see how Philly responds. I think obviously we said this. Well, I mean, you're talking about Prunty, but coaching advantage Celtics, talent advantage probably the Sixers, but youth experience, it might start to show here. Second round, a lot tougher.
You think we see seven games?
I think it probably goes seven.
You think in game seven?
It might be the only fun series. It, like, If LeBron can't absolutely put Cleveland on his back, or if he doesn't get any help, that one might not be any fun. That might just be Toronto takes care of business in 5 or 6. And I think the only fun one we're really going to have, because I thought the Jazz one might be great, but then you miss Rubio and Houston's been playing hot. That's going to be ugly. You know, like you said, I think maybe one could get stolen down. Or you don't steal a game at home technically, but I think that New Orleans could get one at home. But, boy, what if Curry comes back and he's shooting well? It's going to be a bloodbath. I'm not a huge NBA bettor. I've only bet a few games. I'm mostly series stuff. But I have picked my spots and done halfway decent on some halftime bets. And I got the Jazz a couple times during their series. That was easy money.
So what do you think? You're looking for Raptors Sixers?
I'd love that. And not only from a betting standpoint, it'd be fun to watch. I think Raptors Sixers, Rockets Warriors. I mean, that's okay.
I agree with you on Rockets Warriors, and I think I got to stick with my pre-playoffs prediction of Cavs Celtics. And while I recognize that is a long shot, Cavs, I don't know. LeBron, if he can eke out 4 wins, you know, if anyone can do it, he can do it. He's owned this Toronto Raptors team for as long as he's been in the association.
He's on the cusp of a triple double right now, going into the fourth.
I'm looking at him. He's 1 from 6 from the free throw line, though. His legs have got to be shot. If you're not making your free throws, that means your legs are done. And it's going to be tough. They got freaking 14 points from Jeff Green and they're down by 5. Like, that's not a good sign. I think the Raptors are going to, they're going to be tough. And the C's, I think, win in 7. I agree that the series goes the distance. And I think in game 7, Brad Stevens pulls something magic out of his ass. And we get LeBron versus the Celtics, a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Finals where anything can happen.
Yeah, I don't know if anything would surprise me in the East. It just doesn't feel like the underdogs can get much done in the West right now.
I agree.
Too much offensive firepower.
I'm with you. Okay. Well, great pod, man. Let's reconvene this week because as much as I love talking about the NFL, and I love it. And as much as it was fun to recap the draft and go through those props, my mind is not on football right now. And it is not on basketball either. I am way, way off the grid here studying horse racing and breaking down some of these horse races because it is a big weekend for betting on the ponies. Are you starting to get excited for the Derby?
I am. I'll be up. I'll be up at the local horse track, Canterbury Downs. It's opening weekend because we don't have good weather in Minnesota, and it takes till May to even get our track open. So it'll be fun. I love live racing. I love the Derby. The girls up here even get into the spirit. There's a lot of big hats and skin-tight dresses and whatnot, and I can get down with some of that too.
Nice.
Get up to the track, get drunk, lay down some superfectas for a nickel, and try to find some winners.
I love it, man.
I'm pumped for the Oaks Friday too. I love the Oaks.
Oh yeah, Friday is a great day of racing. I made more money on the Oaks last year than I have made in my lifetime betting horses. I hit a pick 4 that had some long shots in it, including the Oaks winner, Abel Tasman. That was a tip from Randy Moss. Abel Tasman was tipped by Randy Moss on Pardon My Take. It came in as a 9-to-1 kind of medium long shot there. Around that, I had some winners around that. Ended up hitting a pick 4, which something like $2 to win like a couple thousand. It was unbelievable. I'll never live that one down, but it's got, I forever have a soft spot in my heart for the Oaks now. So I'm looking forward to these races on Friday, full day of racing. Lots of good stuff to bet on. I've gotten my work done on the Oaks and the Derby at this point, and I'm starting to kind of branch out some of the other races that are throughout the day. Those are obviously the most fun, but there's a lot of places to win and a lot of opportunities to bet. We'll kind of go through, what do you think about going through like a primer of like how to bet horse racing? Like some of the terms, some of the ways it's done.
Yeah, I could use that.
And yeah, so we'll just kind of go through, okay, well, here's what this means. Here's what this means. It's, you know, that there's, it's a super fun thing to bet on, but it's also extremely, it feels extremely out of reach if you've never done it before. Like it's very tough to kind of break into and get a handle of, well, how do I even do this? Like, does my book even offer this? Like, what's a good horse? What's a good, you know, what do these numbers mean when you put numbers up like this? Like, how do I, you know, evaluate this sort of stuff? What's a good approach? So we'll go full on, you know, kind of 101 for part of the pod, and then kind of break down some of the races and some of what we see. And I think, you know, maybe go through a handful of the horses that are among the favorites and kind of talk about their form, talk about why they're favorites, what makes them special. Try to win some money on the ponies. Sound good?
I love it.
All right. Talk to you later. We'll record this on Thursday and post it on Friday so that you can get some listening in right in time to bet in the Oaks and bet in the Derby.
Yeah, and Whale will you'll put up some of those. I think you already did put up some of those fun parlays you threw together. We'll see maybe some people will have some feedback about some better ideas than what we had.
maybe some actual winners.
Maybe we can be dissuaded from that. So,
All right, man. Great pot. Have a good one, and best of luck this week.